I appreciate very much the wonderful song service, the heartfelt prayer, and I desire an interest in your prayers this evening. The effort that it takes to put a meeting on like this is above and beyond, I think, the call of duty. I witnessed yesterday people running around like little ants, and it was a wonderful day, a day of fellowship, and I thoroughly enjoyed being here with you yesterday. But tonight, I'd like to try to expound upon some things that would be found in the Gospel of Luke, and only in the Gospel of Luke. But before I do, I would like to introduce the idea. The Apostle Paul said in 1 Corinthians 7, 1 and 17, "For Christ sent me not to baptize, but to preach the gospel, not with wisdom of words, lest the cross of Christ should be made of none effect." The preaching of the cross of Christ is something that is offensive to some people. It's not something that you would want to sit down at a nice steak supper and talk about, much less witness. I dare say that any crucifixion would be a situation that would be horrible for anyone to sit and watch and gloat about. It was a manner of death that inflicted a great amount of shame and reproach upon the one being put to death. It was Rome's way of persecuting to the utmost degree. And some 2,000 years ago, a man that we love, but we've never physically seen face to face, was crucified in a way that, as far as I'm concerned, is beyond, above and beyond the ordinary, if you will, crucifixion. The Bible tells us that his visage was marred more than any man, so therefore I must conclude that his was an extreme crucifixion. The Bible tells me that there was darkness for 3 hours on the face of the earth, and history doesn't tell us anything about any other crucifixion where that type of scenario took place. The crucifixion of Christ was a very public and a very political event. The keepers of the law, the Pharisees, the Sadducees, the scribes, the people who were in control of that day, it was their great desire to put to death at whatever means was available the Lord Jesus Christ. He meddled with their way of life. He upset their apple cart, if you will. He messed with their religion. He was the one who wrote the law, but they were the keepers of the law, so they thought. His crucifixion would have made the headline news should it been around at that time. It was a very public event. They wanted him dead so bad, to put it on a scale so that we could understand it today, the crucifixion of Christ would have been on the scale of the United States of America taking down Osama bin Laden. They wanted your Lord dead so bad that they put him in a mock trial. They carried him before the rulers of the day. They lied about him. They invented every imaginable way to put him to shame. They crucified him. They did put him to death. They put him in a borrowed tomb, sealed the tomb, set a guard at the tomb, because I think it's Matthew that records that they went to the high priest and said, "We remember that that deceiver said that on the third day he's going to rise again. We remember." The fact that he told his apostles that went right over their heads, but the keepers of the law understood it. They put him to death. They buried him. And 3 days after this spectacle that would have made the headline news, it would have been a front page edition of the Jerusalem Daily Gazette. The King of the Jews is dead. We thought he was the one that would deliver Israel, but he's dead. The cross of Christ is not something that we should take lightly. Now, I've said that because after his death, Peter said, "I'm going fishing. I'm going right back to the lifestyle that I had before." But on the road to Emmaus in Luke chapter 24 and verse 13 is where we'll begin. "And behold, two of them went that same day to a village called Emmaus, which was from Jerusalem about 70 furlongs. Now I'm thinking that this trip is about a 2-hour walk for an average individual just walking along, two individuals walking along, talking as they're going. It's about 7, 7.5 miles. So it's about a 2-hour walk. And as they're walking along and they talk together of all these things which had happened, these two disciples of Christ, these two followers of Jesus, had witnessed his death. They had witnessed this crucifixion. They had witnessed this spectacle of politics. And they talked together of all these things which had happened. And it came to pass that while they communed together and reasoned, Jesus himself drew near and went with them." Now, I'm of the understanding that these two people here were probably just like Peter. Peter said, "I'm going fishing. I figure this was a man and his wife. And if y'all don't believe that it's a man and his wife, I'm going home tomorrow and y'all don't have to, y'all don't have to leave it any further, take any further than that. And if I've made a mistake, it's Brother Chris's responsibility to straighten those out. But I'm of the impression that this is a man and his wife. They've been followers of Christ. They've been disciples of Christ. But they witnessed the crucifixion. They witnessed his burial. And they knew that he wasn't in the tomb this morning whenever Mary and Peter and John went to the tomb. They knew he wasn't there. I'm just going to assume that they figured, well, someone stole his body away. And I just figured they're going back home. Well, he's dead. Peter's gone fishing. We might as well go on back home. But as they're walking, as they're taking this couple hour walk, and they're conversing about all the things, can you imagine the conversation that's going on? We thought it was him. We really did think that he was the Messiah. We thought he was the one that was going to deliver Israel from the Roman bondage. We thought all this about him, but he's dead. And as they're talking and as they're walking along, Jesus just joins up with them. And they don't know who he is. It says, but their eyes were holding that they should not know him. Now, post-resurrection accounts of Jesus, it's not uncommon for people not to know him. Mary didn't know him. She supposed him to be the gardener. Other people didn't know him whenever they saw him. And the fact that she thought that he was the gardener tells me that he looked ordinary. He was in a body that was a physical body, although it was a body that had just been raised from the dead. And he said unto them, what manner of communications are these, that ye have one to another as ye walk and are sad? Here are two people that have a very sad countenance. Their countenance is sad, one of sadness. They're sorrowful. They're distraught, if you will, that their leader, that their Messiah has been taken from them. And one of them, whose name was Cleopas, answering, said unto him, art thou only a stranger in Jerusalem, and hast not known the things which are come to pass there in these days? Did you just arrive into town? Are you a stranger around here? Did you not know this was the most publicized event of the day? For sporting type people, it would have been like the Super Bowl is going on, or the Olympics are coming to town. It was that much of a political, public deal for these Pharisees. They wanted everyone to know that this man that had turned the world upside down with his doctrine, with his new doctrine, they wanted the world to know that they were killing him. And he said unto them, what things? And they said unto him concerning Jesus of Nazareth, which was a prophet mighty indeed in word before God and all the people, and how the chief priests and our rulers delivered him to be condemned to death and have crucified him. But we trusted that it had been he which should have redeemed Israel. And beside all this, today is the third day since these things were done. I believe it's in Acts chapter 1 where the apostles themselves, when the Lord is about to ascend, they ask him, Lord, will thou at this time restore the kingdom to Israel? The Jews had this idea that their Messiah was going to come and show himself and manifest himself, as in Revelation 19, riding on a white horse with all the power and the might of the God of Israel with him, and they were going to get behind him and they were going to conquer once again Rome. That was their idea of this leader. And their leader comes into town riding on a donkey. Not just any ordinary donkey, a donkey that no one's ever ridden on before. The colt, the foal of an ass, that's right. And their idea of what the Messiah was and who he was two different things. Yet certain women of our company made us astonished, which were early at the sepulcher. And when they found not his body, they came saying that they had also seen a vision of angels, which said that he was alive. And certain of them which were with us went to the sepulcher and found it, even as the women had said, but him they saw not. Then said he unto them, O fools, and slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have spoken, ought not Christ to have suffered these things and to enter into his glory? See, the glory of Christ was not that he was going to come riding into town on a white stallion. The glory of Christ was that he was going to redeem his people. Amen. His glory was going to be accomplished at the cross. It's at the cross where the redemption price was paid. It's at the cross where his blood was shed. That precious blood, as the Apostle Peter calls it. He said, ought not Christ to have suffered these things and to enter into his glory? And beginning at Moses and all the prophets, he expounded unto them in all the scriptures the things concerning himself. Now, friends, for 2 hours, or up to 2 hours, this man and his wife had a very unique experience. They got to hear firsthand from the writer of the Old Testament the things in the Old Testament concerning himself and his suffering. They understood. They got to hear direct from the Messiah himself that Genesis chapter 3 and verse 15, where he says, you may bruise my heel, but your head will be bruised. They got to hear from the Messiah himself, from Genesis chapter 49 and verse 10. The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet, until Shiloh come. And unto him shall the gathering of the people be, and him tell them, I'm him. He had a private, if you will, from Isaiah chapter 53, no greater definition, no greater example of the crucifixion. Hundreds of years prior to the crucifixion itself. And I won't read it all, but verse 4. Surely he hath borne our griefs and carried our sorrows, yet we did esteem him stricken, smitten of God, and afflicted. But he was wounded for our transgressions, and he was bruised for our iniquities. The chastisement of our peace was upon him, and with his stripes we are healed. We like sheep have gone astray, and we have turned everyone his own way, and the Lord hath laid on him the iniquity of us all. Jesus says, I'm that guy. That's me. He was oppressed and he was afflicted, yet he opened not his mouth. He is brought as a lamb to the slaughter, and as a sheep before his shears as dumb, so he opened not his mouth. He was taken from prison and from judgment, and who shall declare his generation? For he was cut off of the land of the living. For the transgression of my people was he smitten. Jesus says, that was me. That was me that Isaiah was prophesying about. It was I He said, when David penned down in Psalms 22 and 1, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? David wasn't talking about himself. He was talking about me. When Daniel wrote in Daniel chapter 9 that in the midst of the week shall Messiah be cut off. In the midst of the week shall the sacrifice and the oblation cease. It's in the midst of the week. He said, Daniel was prophesying of me. He said, when Moses lifted up that serpent in the wilderness, that serpent didn't do anything, but it was I that healed. The conversation must have been a conversation when you loved to have heard that sermon. Wouldn't you love to have been there? The proverbial fly on the wall, so to speak, to have heard the sermon that Jesus preached to these two individuals as they're walking with a sad countenance. And as they're walking along, and he tells them, and beginning at Moses and the prophets, he expounded them in all the scriptures the thing concerning himself. And they drew nigh to the village whither they went, and he made as though he would have gone further. He said, we can keep going. I could tell you more. I could expound to you from all of the Old Testament, and I could tell you all the things concerning me. But they constrained him. Friends, I want to tell you something. There's something about being constrained. There's something about being just enthused to go and to be with the Lord. They constrained him, saying, abide with us, for it's toward evening, and the day is far spent. And he went in to tarry with them, and it came to pass, as he sat at meat with them, he took bread and blessed it. The very God of heaven himself, Jesus of Nazareth, the man who, before the apostles, break bread and blessed it, to these two, he broke bread. And he blessed it and he broke it and gave to them. And their eyes were opened and they knew him. And he vanished out of their sight. Now he didn't open up the door and say, well, I'll be leaving now. I've done what I came here to do today. I've manifested myself to you, so I'll just go on my way. He just vanished out of their sight. Just disappeared. And they said one to another, did not our heart burn within us while he talked with us by the way, and while he opened to us the scriptures? My friends, I want to ask you tonight. Is your desire for this meeting, is your desire for the minister that comes after me this evening, is your desire for the ministers that will preach tomorrow, that they would speak the things of Jesus Christ, that your heart might burn within? You know, there's something about having spiritual heartburn that doesn't bother me at all. I ate a little supper a while ago, and I had a real bad case of heartburn, bad case of indigestion. I had to eat some Tums before I could come down here. But I'll tell you right now, spiritual heartburn has never bothered me. Brother Tim, I love spiritual heartburn. Whenever the Lord is manifesting himself amongst his people, when God's people are gathered together and the Lord is manifesting himself and Jesus Christ crucified is being preached, when the gospel, when that word that tells us and comforts us from the inside is being preached, my friends, that kind of spiritual heartburn doesn't bother me in the least bit. I'll take it any day. He says, did not our heart burn within us while he talked with us by the way, and while he opened to us the scriptures? And they rose up the same hour. Now, I want you to get this picture. It's the afternoon, it's the evening. They have been on a 2-hour walk, a 7-mile journey with the Lord. They stopped at the house to have supper, and all of a sudden they realize who he is. He disappears, and they rose up that hour. They didn't wait till the next morning. They didn't wait till a couple of days later, they rose up the same hour and returned to Jerusalem and found the 11 together and them that were there with them, saying, "The Lord is risen indeed and hath appeared to Simon." And they told what things were done in the way and how he was known of them in breaking of bread. Now, I'm fixing to sit down here in a few minutes, but I want you to think about something. Here's two people that have witnessed the most devastating act that has ever been accomplished by man. Now, I've said this before, I may have said it here, but I'll say it again. It was accomplished by man because Jesus said so. There wasn't enough soldiers in Rome to put him on that cross if he hadn't wanted to go for you, Brother Chris. My friends, there wasn't enough soldiers there to put him on that cross if he hadn't wanted to die for you, if he hadn't wanted to do what he did for you right there that day. There wasn't enough soldiers there to put him on that cross. But he willingly laid down his life for you and I so that we might enjoy these blessings. Now, this man who has walked along this way with these people for this period of time and expounded upon the scriptures to them about all the things that had happened to him. And he said, "Ought not Christ to have suffered these things and to enter into his glory?" My friends, the glory of Christ is not in what Rome did to him. The glory of Christ is in what he did for us. That's where he got his glory. He got his glory in what he did for us. Let me give you something to think about. Real quick. And if you don't like it, you can throw it in a trash can on the way out. But as you're on your way home, as you're on your way home tonight, and as you're on your way home to glory, think about this along the way. That same Jesus is walking right along with us. As you're on your way home, Jesus is with you. He's promised he would never leave us. He'd never forsake us. I never concern myself whether or not Jesus will be with us in a meeting. I always concern myself whether he'll manifest his presence among us. Because he's promised me he would never leave me and he'd never forsake me. Now, it doesn't say that he will always manifest his presence among us, but he'll always be there. As we're walking along that road, Jesus is always there. And as we're walking along that road and he's always with us, it's only he that can open our eyes to understanding. He's the only one. And whether it be in the breaking of bread as we saw it, as he saw it, as they saw it there, or whether it be the breaking of the bread of life, the Spirit of God, the Word of God, the breaking of this bread, that which we feed upon, it's still he that opens our understanding. So as we go through this meeting, my prayer is that our hearts will burn within us, that the name of the Lord would be glorified, that we might be edified, built up, encouraged. These two people were so encouraged that night that they didn't wait to go back to Jerusalem to tell the people. They said, "We got to go right now." And whenever you're encouraged by that, whenever these brethren have driven so or flew so far and driven so far to come to a meeting to tell people that it's true. See, that's what they went to tell the folks back at Jerusalem, that what we heard is true. We saw him with our own eyes. We saw him face to face. We saw him. It's true. Jesus is alive. And that is the message. That's the message that will give you hope when you're walking down that road and you think you're all alone? The message that Jesus is still alive. Come ahead, brother.